Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, father of hangovers, and gypsy bartender.
And hey, I'm Kat Hamidi of D.C.'s Capitoline Vermouth and Aperitivi. I'm here filling in for my friend Matthew Ramsey, who I believe is either in an airport or on an airplane.
Flying high.
Flying high, literally and figuratively. We just ask one favor, TSA, if you could just take it easy on him. He means well.
He's gentle. Please be gentle.
Please be gentle with him. But yeah, thanks for having me, Eddie. Happy to fill in.
Great. No, we're happy to have you here. And in addition to Kat, we are joined by Tori Pratt, the founder of True Syrups and Tonics.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Welcome. So, as we usually start off with the show, what are we drinking? Or what did you want to choose for your shift drink today?
I pick a daiquiri because I just love rum. I have no complaints about rum.
You mentioned that earlier. You said essentially any rum, anything, you're on board for.
Exactly. Any kind of rum. Honestly, I'm not picky.
And you just came back from a trip from Tulum.
I did.
Where you had not just tequila, but also rum.
I had a lot of rum.
Yes,
I had a lot of rum. I had a lot of mezcal and I'm kind of wishing that I was still there, I have to admit. But I'm still
reasonable.
Happy to be here, guys. But yeah.
This is second best. Barely Tulum and then hanging out with me and Eddie.
Exactly.
And knowing that you were not in the U.S., you had access to
some delicious Havana Club.
Havana Club. Which is kind of the bartender's holy grail.
Oh, God, it's so good. And it's so cheap. It's one of my favorite liquors. My husband and I went to Cuba about a year ago. And we showed up at a bar and we were like, I need to have this infamous Havana Club. And I ordered it and the guy said it's going to be three CUC. And I was like, oh my God, that's like three US dollars. That's expensive. I expected to come to Cuba and not pay money. And then he comes over and he just puts the bottle down. And I was like, oh, I can
now
get
I
used
understand.
To this. Yes, I could do this.
And so were you drinking it just out of the bottle? Was that your system?
Yes, I drank it out of the bottle. But I mean, so rum there is actually cheaper than any of the mixers. So what they do is they'll like prep a pina colada for you, but without the booze. And they just give you that because that's the most expensive thing for them.
Oh,
and then
right.
they hand you the bottle and they
Love
say,
that.
Add as much as you want. Which for me is dangerous.
There was an old school bar in DC called the Round Table. Am I dating myself? Where you would get, you know, if you ordered like a gin and tonic, you'd get a glass full of tonic and, you know, like 3 ounces of gin. The good old days. The 1990s.
I actually don't know this. Where was this located?
The Round Table was up by, it's almost Friendship Heights. It was just, I was living in Maryland at the time, so the bars would close and we would have another hour in DC, so you'd jump the border and you'd go drink at the Round Table. Likely underage.
Okay.
Friendship Heights? Yeah, somebody knows. Somebody out there knows. Up north.
Up north.
Yeah.
We're away from
upper northwest.
From the prying eyes of the downtown.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's a sad state. I've been bemoaning the lack of maybe secret after hours places around DC. Even though there's so many bars and restaurants opening, it's still a little bit hard for us industry folks to
find a spot.
Unwind.
Sneak in a little bit.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, DC is getting a little too clean.
But all the better because I'm old. So.
at that point, you can just go home.
Yes.
If you have the skills.
Yeah,
and
fair
the
enough.
Bar.
And make your own cocktail.
Make your own cocktails.
Oh, I wonder what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, right? I don't know. It might be just like the massive full bar that
Master
I have at home.
Segue.
Yes. Before we segue into what you are doing from day to day, every day, So I made a daiquiri for you.
It's delicious.
It's a variation on a daiquiri, what we make at Room 11, called Rum Guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we use three kinds of rum.
Okay.
A rum agricole, a mm-hmm. Jamaican rum, and a Guyanese rum.
Mm.
Some cane syrup, lime juice, and bitters. So it's a little darker than usual.
It's delicious.
I think it's tasty.
It's really, really good.
I think it should hit.
I love the mix of the three different rums. It definitely like spans the spectrum of the flavor of rum. And I feel like it makes the acidity of the lime at the end a little bit less. Sometimes a daiquiri can be a little too clean. At least, I mean,
I thought you were going to go aggressive, like a little too acidic for you, but
oh no, I actually, the other way around. I like more lime than most people like.
Right.
So,
wanted to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I always have to ask people, like, how sweet do you like it? And if they say sweet is probably double the amount of sugar that I would use.
Right.
It's ironic because I run a syrup company, but I'm not really into sweets and things that are super, super sweet. So,
right.
Yeah, but I think this is delicious.
And so for the sake of maybe those of us that don't know our daiquiri history, mm-hmm. classic daiquiri would be just with what, Eddie? White rum.
Light rum?
Yeah.
Wait, white rum?
White rum.
White rum. Sugar, usually cane syrup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And lime juice.
Just lime.
Fresh,
that's very straightforward.
It's a three
super
drink,
classic.
Three ingredient drink. It actually has some DC roots. It first came to America. The story goes JFK actually brought it with him.
I love that.
From his time in the services. And there's the Navy Club? Army Navy? The Navy Club in Bethesda, Maryland. And so that's where they first started serving the daiquiri. So that's a
nice little piece of DC history. I love that.
I like that. I like when cocktails tie
into
DC
lore. Eddie,
you're
so full of information.
I've learned from other people. People who've done the research.
Crib notes.
Anyways.
Ooh, I get a daiquiri too. This looks amazing.
All right, cheers.
Salute.
Cheers.
Happy Monday afternoon.
Happy Monday afternoon.
It is 90 degrees outside in DC, and so this is... very well suited to the day, nice. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like on a day like today, I'm either picking a daiquiri or a gin ricky.
Fair. Mm-hmm. I love that. All simple, straightforward.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, into that.
May I also say that ricky month is coming up?
That's
it's
right.
It's actually July.
It
July is
currently.
DC ricky month. The ricky is one of only two cities in America that have an official cocktail. So just keep an eye out for the Ricky competition finals, which a lot of bartenders participate in.
Yeah.
Eddie, what's your favorite Ricky?
Pressure.
I mean, pressure. I just have to know.
Favorite Ricky?
Yeah.
To be honest, I don't like the Ricky.
Oh, shoot. Wow. Oh, man. Why? Why?
Oh, boy.
Can you tell me why? Please.
Not balanced? Not. What? Okay, I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
Drink.
I just have assumptions.
A lot of people think Ricky's are gin, and gin with just lime juice and soda water is a little bit tart in one note for me.
I understand.
And then,
so you like a bourbon Ricky.
But you put the wedge in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the distinguishing factor is you express
the
juice from the lime and the oil, and then you drop it into the glass.
Because that's one of the things that I think for me makes a big difference, especially if I like zest it beforehand and toss that in there. The oil from the lime makes the lime juice taste sweeter, so you don't need to add anything. I find that a lot of bars in DC actually add, you know, simple or something like that to it, which makes it not a Ricky.
It's not a Ricky.
It's not a Ricky. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not gonna split hairs on that, but I do think that I have definitely a tart sense of taste.
Yeah. And I think that probably works with the products that you're making, right?
It's about creating
balance.
Right, exactly. So I don't know if we can
tell us a little bit about your company.
Sure. So I run True Syrups and Garnishes. We're a craft cocktail ingredient company. We make five different types of classic cocktail syrups. They're all inspired by pre-prohibition recipes. So basically, we're just trying to bring back the classics and bring what you would get in a bar atmosphere to your home. So it's easier to make cocktails at home. So they're all syrups right now, and they're actually not that sweet. We have a tonic, a ginger, a cola, a rich simple, and a grenadine. And they're all like classically made, really, really simple ingredients. And they're designed, like you were saying, to be mixed with some kind of tart ingredient or with club soda, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be more versatile than that. I've definitely toyed around with our ingredients and made very strange things. Our ginger I regularly use in place of grated ginger. My husband is Indian, and so if I'm going to make, you know, Indian food, I have to grate a lot of ginger. Right. And so I just toss a little bit of our ginger syrup in there, and it fills the need without me making a lot of effort into it.
Yeah, I was saying before the show, before we went on air, that I love all of your products. I think they're all really clean and tasty and
thank you.
Very well made. But the ginger in particular, what I love about it is that it kind of hurts a little. Like, it's really packs a punch. It's like, it's no joke. And that's what I want from any ginger product or cocktail or food thing that has ginger in it. It's like, you want to know it's there, and you nailed that for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, that's actually what we were going after, because I tasted all this ginger beer out there that just didn't taste like ginger. It tasted like sugar too much and no ginger flavor. And when I think of ginger, I think of like a real ginger punch.
Right.
So we put a whole pound of ginger in every single bottle. So we're going through a lot of ginger these days.
And I've heard you bemoan multiple times about peeling the ginger.
Yes. I mean, I bemoan on behalf of my staff, because I said, I'm not doing that, but you guys can do it. And now we actually have a ginger peeler.
which I would love to see. That.
Yeah, I kind of want to just like come hang out and check out the ginger
you
peeler.
You are welcome anytime if you guys want to show up. I mean, all these industrial machines are really cool the first time you use them, and then after that it's kind of like
yeah.
Like my brother the other day was bottling some beer that he'd brewed, and he's like, oh, do you want to watch me bottle? And I was like, are you kidding me?
I do this every day.
I see this stuff like on a daily basis. I want to see the opposite of bottling.
Yeah. I just want to drink it.
I just want to pull it all up.
Exactly.
Well, that's cool. It runs in your family then. You got the creative bones. And
yeah, I think it kind of all came from my mom and my dad. They started a smoked seafood business together when I was little. Yeah, so they actually won at the Fancy Food Show in Philadelphia in like the early 90s. And they also had a catering company that they ran. And so I always ate like the best food at home.
And you're from Philly, isn't that right?
Yeah, I'm originally from Philadelphia. And my mom was a caterer there, and the smoked seafood business was just amazing. So I grew up around food and always knew I wanted to do something in food. I just took me a little bit of a winding path to get there.
Yeah, you went in a different direction originally
your
plans.
I did. I went to Georgetown undergrad, and then I ended up working in international development for a couple of years, which was great, but I really wanted to be closer to like the product of what I was doing. I was working with the Philippines, which was a world away. So it was great work. It was just not my jam. So I spent a lot of my time drinking, and here we are.
Yes, indeed.
Is that a running theme when it comes to, let's say, international development workers, journalists?
I think that may be true. I'm not going to generalize, but I have met a lot of international development workers who find out that like I'm running this business after having been in international development, and they're like, "Oh man, I wish I could do that." While
there
also
is a light at
like
the end of the tunnel,
five cocktails at the same time. I'm like, this might be a thing.
Okay. Show them how it's done, Tori. Show them how it's done.
I mean, we see that in DC quite a bit, actually. Maybe it's just true. Because we have a lot of NGO and nonprofit workers here,
or maybe it's a shit work environment.
And we are per capita the highest drinking city, I think, in the country.
I think we also the highest educated. So
yeah, I think we're crushing basically any other city. Fight me. Come on, New York, bring it.
We'll drink you under the table. But yeah, you did have quite a winding road to get this point. You started off with the tonic.
Yes, I started off with the tonic in fall of 2014. And I actually thought that we were going to develop a line of different flavored tonic syrups, and this was going to be our original, and then we'd, you know, maybe develop seasonal ones, spring, summer, fall, things like that. But when we got to January of the next year, like 2 months after starting the business, I had all these customers asking for real grenadine. And I said, well, I have a recipe for that, and I feel like maybe we can do that. So my husband's an entrepreneur too, and we kind of, the whole idea with this was just throw it out there, see what sticks, be willing to change, be willing to like mess it up a little bit and like not go with your plans, and just see like what the market wants, and it ended up working out for us. So I worked on a grenadine and released it just like a couple months after starting. And to be honest, I think all of the syrups are really good. I think the grenadine has the best expression of the pomegranate fruit that you can imagine. So like, and I've heard from a lot of bartenders that like they taste of all of our other syrups and they really like them, especially the ginger, but the grenadine has something special to it. And I started looking out on the market and trying to figure out like, why is all this other grenadine shitty? Cause there is like real grenadine, real pomegranate grenadine out there.
Yeah.
And I realized it's mostly because in order to get better margins, they water it down. So it's not just pomegranate juice. It's pomegranate juice and water, right, plus, you know, syrup, which is fine. But that doesn't taste like pomegranate after. Sure. Once you shake it in a drink, you know, you need something that's concentrated pomegranate flavor. It's going to come through in a drink.
So have you found, you know, there's a big, I don't know if we want a brand drop on the air, but there's a big brand that you probably are fighting the tide, right?
Yeah.
So I can relate to that because I make small batch vermouth and aperitivo.
Yeah, yeah, you bet.
And
you totally
so
get that.
It's an education as you go kind of thing.
But absolutely.
People have these standardizations. You know, you think grenadine is this one thing. It comes in a plastic bottle.
Totally.
It's been around forever.
Totally.
It doesn't taste like anything from nature as far as I can tell. I mean.
Right. It does not.
You know, and so you have to sort of fight the tide a little bit.
Definitely.
So as you go, I imagine, I think you and I, amongst other things, have that in common that it's like, you gotta
so
teach people.
Yeah, I totally agree. Any lessons learned on that you want to share with me?
Oh, Lord. Let's not bore the people. But yeah, I don't know. You know, I just talking to people and tasting them on stuff. Your
of
product
course.
Is great. So that's it.
I mean, Kat, you're at the farmer's market every Thursday, and I'll swing by and laugh at you, but...
He's a very supportive friend. Points, fingers, he laughs.
So what is vermouth exactly?
Yeah.
Those are the questions that you'll
every
get.
Every day, yeah. Oh, I don't like vermouth, or what is vermouth, or... I'll try the gin, but I don't want to try the vermouth kind of thing. And so you have to go, all right.
Okay.
No pressure.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
And then, Tori, I heard a podcast where you gave a short interview, and you said one of your biggest points for the company was to educate people. What about your products did you have to educate that has a big misconception?
Let's see. Something like the tonic actually has a lot of misconceptions associated with it. I mean, all of the products do, because everything has morphed through time. But one of the things, we recently launched on Amazon, and one of the things that keeps popping up in reviews is people say, this doesn't taste like tonic.
Uh-huh.
And I always have to say, right, it doesn't taste like modern tonic. It tastes like original tonic, like the way tonic actually tasted when tonic came about. And that's a really hard thing to say to a customer who just, you know, really, really loves the taste of, you know, modern tonic water that's actually loaded with like high fructose corn syrup
and artificial flavors
exactly.
And everything else.
It's all
so
artificial.
So will you touch on then, this is parallel to vermouth production too. It's
yeah.
just really to hear you say it out loud. I'm like, this is,
yeah.
you're like in my head.
It's but, exactly the
so
same thing.
It's exactly the same thing. But can you touch on maybe a little bit
sure.
what a classic pre-prohibition tonic
absolutely.
Ingredients might have been in flavor profiles.
Sure. So the most common flavor profile ours is based off of British India, which is where
right.
the gin and tonic originally came from. So the gin and tonic, the origin of the gin and tonic is British India, British soldiers were using quinine tea to combat the effects of malaria.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of their ration and they were required to drink it. But I don't know if anybody has had pure quinine tea, but it's really fucking bitter.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
It is. It's super intense. And so the actual history of the botanicals is you use things that would be used in chai. So it would commonly have been used at the time. And so seeing things like ginger, cinnamon, you know, lemongrass, there's clove and allspice and cardamom and a whole bunch of other botanicals that are very commonly used in chai. And it really helps round out the bitterness behind there of the cinchona bark. And then actually when you add gin to it, it is It's just like this beautiful combination with the botanicals. It helps pull out the juniper. Like cinnamon and juniper have this like beautiful flavor combination thing that goes on. And most people think of cinnamon as just being fall, but when you mix gin and cinnamon, it kind of just tastes balanced. So that's a big misconception we normally get is, you know, this doesn't taste like tonic water. I'm like, yeah, it's very different. But and it takes like a little bit of a changing of your expectations. But I think for most people, it's a game changer and people don't go back to modern tonic water.
Yeah, agreed. Very special.
I think we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with Tori Pratt of True Syrups and Tonics.
The song you're listening to is Let's Go West by Kido. That's K-I-E-D-O. And if you're tuned in now, you're listening to Full Service Radio.
Welcome back to Shift Drink here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel. There was some really groovy tunes actually to bring
really
us back
groovy
in.
Tunes. My goodness.
I have to take a
so
nap.
So relaxed.
After this.
Yeah.
I'm here with our guest host, Kat Amidi.
Hello, hello.
Making some great vermouths here in the district. And I'm also here with another great entrepreneur, Tori Pratt, making some great syrups and garnishes.
Hey, hey.
Also. So I, as two entrepreneurs next to me, making some, you know, making product on a larger scale than what I'm used to in a cocktail bar, there are always kind of mishaps and things. And Kat, we've talked about this a couple of times. I'm sure you've probably had batches go bad and this shit hit the wall.
Yes.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, our business is all about quality. So, I mean, there are some businesses that would say like, oh, I'll just leave it out there and it'll be fine. But I care so much personally about quality that, I mean, sometimes you just got to throw a massive batch out.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Like, financially, it really sucks. But you just make it happen. So
financially, and also I think like for the market, it sucks. You know, there's a lot of, it's not just one thing, right? It's like, totally. Oh, I don't have the product that you need and want. And
exactly.
Fuck, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
But I'm going to do it right.
Yeah. Right. Like we launched on Amazon and stuff has been pretty nuts on Amazon. And we've been regularly running out of inventory on Amazon. And so trying to work with those hiccups with customers who say, you know, like, this needs to be available and like deliverable to my
house. By the way, I'm going to interrupt you again. Congratulations for getting on fucking Amazon where drones can drop off tonic syrup to people. It's incredible. We're living in the future.
Drone cocktails.
Sorry, go on.
Thank you. Yeah, but I mean, you just have to deal with it and go and figure out all of, I feel like starting a business is problem solving. Like if you can problem solve, like you can figure it out. Do right by your customers, like golden rule style, and you'll be good. But I think that there are a lot of people who try to cut corners and, you know, just will put out an inferior product just because it, you know, helps their bottom line and maybe a customer won't notice. But I just don't like to do business like that. So we just make it happen. But there definitely have been times where, I mean, we've had to recall whole batches. We had a batch of like grenadine that molded on the shelf. And we had to figure out all the stores where it had gone, like pull it off the shelves, replace it. And then also, you know, go to all those customers who had to deal with a moldy bottle and say like, hey, yo, I'm really sorry. It was just a 2-degree temperature difference in our filling machine that messed it up. So, and then replace it because that's what you do. And it's not just, you know, the customer is always right. It's that, you know, who the fuck wants a moldy bottle of grenadine on their shelf?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your ass on the line at the end of the day. So
exactly.
Makes all the sense. Yeah.
I mean, how much of your, let's say, brand image, I hate using these terms, but
it's, okay.
It's linked towards being a local product here in DC.
So a lot of it is. There's a decent amount of like local capital. I would say on Amazon, though, it's weird. Like 90% of our customers are from outside DC, Maryland, Virginia area. I mean, I recently took all of our spreadsheet of where our orders have gone, and I uploaded it to Google Maps, which is something you can do, and it's like super easy. And then you develop like
it is the future. Oh my god!
And then I saw a map of like where all of our stuff went, and I was like, who is that dude in the middle of North Dakota who is ordering our grenadine?
What's his name?
You gotta shout him out.
I actually don't know his name.
Greg.
Greg in North Dakota.
Let's say it's Greg. Yeah. Thanks, Greg. Really appreciate it.
The moose and Neil, we all love you. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's running a bar. Could that be
it? He might be. Actually, there are a lot of people I can tell because they're actually ordering two businesses. And so it's been a really interesting way for us to grow our wholesale business because I'll see, you know, somebody from X liquor store or this bar or, you know, maybe a massive hotel chain, which has ordered a bunch of our stuff. You know, they'll say, you know, they'll order it on Amazon and I'll see it and then I can reach out and offer a much better price. And you know, it's a really good way to grow the business, and to find new customers, in a way that you can't if you just, you know, are beating down doors trying to find accounts. And I'm sure that's something frustrating for you, Kat, because like you can't do something like Amazon.
Well, no, I was going to say that the benefits of having a food product is that you can send it anywhere.
Yes.
Anybody can get it at any time. Yeah, it's a little trickier when you're making booze.
Exactly.
Definitely.
And you have to deal with distributors and like that is a complicated game that I know I have to enter, but it's a little terrifying.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. I mean, your margins are already super tight in the booze world, and they get even tighter when you're, you know, you have to pay somebody else to sell your product for you. But good on you for being able to sell it to Greg. And did we decide his name was Greg?
Yeah, Greg.
Greg in North Dakota.
Go, Greg!
Yes.
We will have an Amazon discount code. Maybe we'll call it Go Greg.
Go Greg. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Perfect.
It'll be 20% off after the show. We'll put it on social media.
We'll make sure everyone
very generous
can get their hand on it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess What is your elevator pitch for, let's say, if you wanted to sell to a bar? And a lot of bartenders do take pride in making their own
stuff. And, you know, I'm not going to stand in the way of that. Because I think that the reason I got into this is because it was a beautiful creative pursuit for me. And I think if a bar can, and a bartender has the time and the space to be able to do that, then I think that's a beautiful thing. But if they want a easier solution that is a more consistent product, because, you know, we're doing it in large batches, it's cheaper on a per drink basis. I mean, most of the time it tastes better because we can get it fresher to you guys. That's usually my elevator pitch. I keep it real simple because if people don't want to order it, they won't order it. And for bartenders especially, if you're doing your own thing, then you just do your own thing. And, like, that's okay with me. That is a very, very small portion of our business. And I think it'll eventually become a larger portion of our business, but not for premium craft bars. I think premium craft bars, you know, they have the time and the space to do it themselves. And for us, like, our margins are better on working with larger chains and places like that that don't have the time, or they don't have, like, skilled bartender expertise or any space in the kitchen or in the refrigerator for this stuff. Because most syrups, if they're not, like, you know, hot filled, which is what we do, then they go bad within a week. And, you know, nobody wants to be making syrups on a weekly basis unless you're really producing a premium product like most super premium craft bars in DC.
And oops, sorry, go ahead, Ed.
No.
I was going to say that you know, I think you're targeting folks at home, right?
Absolutely. You know? And, yeah, folks at home, and those are more of our premium customer base. It's like, yeah, folks at home who want to up their bartending game but aren't feeling like, you know, making, you know, 20 different syrups a week and then letting them go bad in their fridge. Or the other thing is, like, I use them all the time at home, and it's not just because I run this business. It's because I have cocktail parties all the time. I actually run a series of cocktail classes.
Oh, nice.
I did not know that. Yeah. I don't do it all the time. I'm actually starting to, like, build that out a little bit. I run an Airbnb in our basement, and we're working on an Airbnb experience where, it's like, it's kind of a ridiculous life, but it works.
This is another conversation that I have with folks who, for example, the farmer's market, the people I'm selling to are people that work downtown or tourists sometimes that are willing to put a bag of vermouth or the Tiber aperitivo in their suitcase and take it home with them to North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
is that you have really good gin, right? So you work, maybe you live in a community like DC where we have a huge makers, distillers, brewers community, and you have all this high quality craft product, and you have great spirit, and you have the perfect glassware, and you have the really beautiful Japanese shaker, and then you have garbage vermouth, or you have garbage modern blank insert name tonic here. So you're spending all this money,
right,
and you have this beautiful bar set up, and then you have these secondary products that don't highlight your spirit, don't highlight what you're doing. And so that's, I think people are catching on, I guess. I mean, I know.
Absolutely.
Capital Line's been on market for 3 years now, and it's just a totally different animal now in 2018 than it was in 2015, as far as having those conversations with people. So this is the
same
deal.
In terms of, like, teaching consumers about what they're...
I mean, it's still a struggle. It's vermouth.
Right. Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. People ask, like, why vermouth? And I just say, because I never want to retire. I don't know. I work till I'm dead. But yeah, so it's the same concept is that you're spending money and time, and you're very proud of these products that you have on your home bar, and you should be highlighting them with you know, incredible other products.
Exactly.
That's craft as well.
Right. Yeah. And you think about it, and, you know, most cocktails, the booze is only half or less than half of the ingredients. And the mixer is the other half to maybe 3/4 of the ingredients. And so if you're putting something that is loaded with, like, high fructose corn syrup on top of your, like, delicious craft gin, like, you're not going to taste that gin, you know, and you're not really appreciating that spirit. And also, like, you think about it on a per drink, like, cost basis, and, like, ours is a concentrate, and it ends up being about the same cost as if you were to use, like, one of those insert, like, modern tonic water.
Yeah, are we going to get sued if we say things like Seagram's? And...
Well, I was about to drop Fevertree, but a couple of years ago, they added to their packaging, you know, use
specifically
whatever,
for cocktails.
Use only. I mean, why would you use shit if it's going to be 3/4 of your drink?
Exactly.
That's exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. And I mean, they've absolutely dominated the market in like the UK and Europe. And also in the US, they have a little bit less presence in the US than they do in the UK and Europe, though. But they are one of the fastest growing companies in the world. So
fascinating. I feel like it's sort of ubiquitous almost, you know, when you, like it's
it
on
is.
If there is a prefab ginger beer or tonic
absolutely.
On a lot of bar shelves for on-prem restaurants and bars, I feel like it's a lot of times it's that.
That's
a tough battle. I mean, that's a tough, you know, it's like
I mean, what
the giant that you're battling.
Well, the truth is, I don't know if we're actually battling Fevertree.
Right. Like, I'll never compete with Martini and Rossi. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, also, the other thing like, you know, pre-carbonated only really covers a section of beverages, like of cocktails. There's a huge selection of cocktails that aren't, like, pre-carbonated and don't have carbonation in them.
For sure.
And so if you're going to really, you know, fulfill that bartending need that you're talking about at home, like people having, like, the, like, versatility to, like, make a lot of different cocktails, you can't just have carbonated mixers.
Yeah, it's multi-use syrup. Yeah,
and
it's not just that you're married to ginger beer or whatever it is.
Right, exactly. And, like, the ginger syrup, I mean, like in any premium bar, you have a ginger syrup behind the bar because you can use it for making ginger beer, and you can also use it for making like a penicillin, which needs a ginger syrup. And there are, that's why it's like more of a versatility game. And I don't think, like, I won't ever be able to compete with Fevertree, but I do think that we are changing the way that people are drinking at home. Because people are more willing to take a couple steps to make a good cocktail at home.
For sure.
And like just in the same way that they're willing to buy premium ingredients. It's really, we're trying to change a game here. And I think we're turning a tide. I don't know. We'll see.
I think so. People want local, not just local. I mean, in other markets, people want craft and they want to know that it was made thoughtfully by hand.
Yes.
And that it makes a difference. So,
well, there's craft and then I kind of feel like going back to making those 2 or 3 ingredient drinks that are classics and make them easy. The Aperol Spritz has been on the forefront of my mind lately, and how ubiquitous that is. It is literally the summer of the spritz.
It is. It is. It's so popular. I actually had somebody request for my cocktail class tonight, anything with Aperol. And I was like, 3 years ago, I don't think I would have talked to most people and they would have known what Aperol was. It's like a very, it's crazy.
I want to channel a little bit of Matthew Ramsay.
Oh,
And I know you cook a lot, and you probably have a creative streak in you. Wildest Dreams, next product, if you went on to launch, cocktail-related, or since we're talking about everything from glassware to syrups to mixers to the spirit, what do you want to...
I would say I am working on a cocktail, a syrup, like, gift set, because I really, I mean, that's like a fun thing that we're working on that I know that will do well because it will introduce people to all of our syrups and then they can buy the larger bottle.
You mean just like in a smaller
format? It's
going to be
a gift, exactly, like, you know, those like bitters gift sets, except it's going to be a syrup gift set, and it'll be all 5 of our syrups, but it'll be 2-ounce bottles. So you get basically 10 cocktails out of this, this box. And it'll be good for, like, for gifting, but that's more of, like, on the commercial side. In terms of the creative side, something that I really want to release that there are a lot of things I want to release, but one thing I really want to release is an oleosaccharum, because oleosaccharum ups your bar game, like, whoa.
For all the kids out there, you don't know.
Oh, yeah, so oleosaccharum is a, it's an oil that's basically... it's an oil with sugar and citrus rind. So you combine citrus rinds, mostly just the peel, with sugar, and then the oil that drops off of it is oleosaccharum.
So it's like, forget what you know about simple syrup.
Exactly.
This is elevating your game.
This is, and it's classically used as a punch base, but it can be used in so many other ways. Like, if you don't happen to have citrus around and you wanted to express orange peel on top of your old fashioned, you could do a dropper of oleosaccharum and you get that orange oil that you would have gotten from the orange peel. And so it's like, that is one of my like nerdy things that I always keep around that I would love to sell and teach people, you know, how to use, because
and from a production point of view, you know, you might not be using, say, orange, the pulp and the juice, right? I mean, it's kind of like, it's waste, you know, it's waste.
Right.
It's peel.
Exactly.
And it's sugar. So it's utilizing every part of that fruit.
Exactly. And we actually use orange and lemon peel already, just zest actually, in the tonic. And we have a lot of orange and lemon waste. Mm. So we actually make a lemon cordial, or like a sour mix, basically. Yeah, from
sort of the opposite
from
of
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I use it like personally, and then we're also considering releasing it as a product as well. Because I just really don't like having all that waste. Yeah. We actually work out of a community kitchen space, and so we mostly give our extra citrus to all the caterers who can use it for other things. Yeah. But, you know, we're not about waste, so.
I was going to say, all you folks at home who are making cocktails and you juice your citrus, keep the rinds.
Yes.
Yeah, that's treasure.
Throw
yeah.
it into a small bucket of sugar, mm-hmm. mash it down, let it sit
room
for
temp
a while.
And let it hang out, yeah.
And then you can make a syrup out of that sugar, and it's actually...
It's
10 times better.
Dynamite.
It's
so good.
That's your oleo. Yeah. Well, we're running low on time. Let's start doing one of our other games.
Oh, no.
So let's start. Ooh, let's go for the quick questions right now.
Rapid fire or? Okay.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Oh, I love a sound effect.
We need but it's not quite with Matthew where we have her.
No. That was perfect. Yeah, Matthew, good. Who? This is a very comfortable seat, my friend Matthew. It's very comfortable here.
He's made quite a little wedge in there.
Okay, so go ahead. You want to start?
I'm going to start with the first question.
Okay.
The weather is amazing right now. What would you rather be doing right now?
Probably picking okra from my okra plant.
Wow. Okay, homesteader.
Wow.
Okay.
My neighbor definitely joked with me that I'm definitely a homesteader.
Love that.
I live in Northeast DC and we have this tiny yard, but like, yeah.
And you chose to plant okra. I was driving with you up until this moment.
Then you haven't had okra right. Because like okra can be, okay, so my husband's Indian, as I said before, and like Indian okra, it's not slimy. Okay. It's spicy. It's delicious.
What time's dinner tonight?
7. 7
Tied up tonight, but we'll get back together. Okay, sorry. Rapid fire question.
Sorry.
So we are all sort of Eddie and I, and you certainly are a DC restaurant and bar aficionado. What is your absolute favorite DC restaurant or bar or bathroom? For any reason, really.
Oh, I'm actually going to like completely change it up, and I'm going to say a Philadelphia bar or restaurant. So there's a restaurant called the Cosmopolitan?
Yes.
Continental. That's what it's called.
Yes.
And it's in Philly, and it's a Stephen Starr restaurant, and you go downstairs, and it has two-way glass into both of the bathrooms. But you forget about it by the time you come out of the bathroom. So you're looking at yourself in the mirror, and actually everyone who's outside the bathroom is watching you.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's what nightmares are made of.
But it's super creative.
But cool. No, it's great. Just I never want to go to that restaurant.
You just kind of blew my mind, because I was there a couple years ago and I got really drunk before a wedding, and I don't remember that bathroom.
Oh, God.
So I'm sure I did some ridiculous.
To be a fly on the other side of that glass.
I will have to revisit that memory. What was your go-to teenage drink?
Boozy drink, you mean?
Oh, we're talking about your too young to be drinking this.
Malibu and Coke.
Ooh.
Oof. Good God. Sorry.
All right, no, that sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah.
I think mine was Captain Morgan and Coke.
Yeah. I mean,
I wasn't picky,
let's be clear.
No.
I don't know
what the hell you're
did
doing.
Did we have options?
It was a different time. what do you think is the most overrated cocktail? This is a good question.
What is the most overrated cocktail?
Like, you know, 10 years ago it was the mojito, right? Not to bust anybody's mojito balls.
I mean, I love rum, so you're not going to get me on that one. But
you know, it's like...
I would probably say... I don't like anything that has Campari in it. I love real versions of Campari, like this beautiful deliciousness that we're drinking right now.
That's such a...
I didn't mean to tee that up, but
Cat's headset just fell off.
Sorry, my headset just fell off. No, it's my
I think she may agree with me.
I was thinking somebody's going to send you hate mail. Now I know who it is.
No, I'm kidding. Go on.
No, fair enough.
I love Olimari. I love everything. But I just can't deal. Because I think the sugar in it is just like it's shitty sugar.
And I can tell now,
and I just can't drink it. And so if I order a Negroni out, I specify I want like Chinar, or I want, you know, any of the local options, because it's just I don't like it.
And even though Chinar is owned by Campari,
I'm like, whatever, it's okay.
Yeah, it's a different product.
Exactly.
What do you think? Fuck, marry, kill?
I have one more question.
Oh, you have one more question.
I have two more questions. Just because it's poignant to the times these days, a lot of politicians are being approached by the regular citizens. If you were to throw a piece of food at a politician in public, doesn't matter what affiliation, what would it be?
What would the food be, or what would the
what would the food item be?
Oh, I really like that. Salted caramel custard.
Because it's hot.
No, because it's cold. It's cold because it's sticky. Yeah. It's going to leave a residue, and it's awkward texture. Can you imagine having it anywhere but your mouth? Like, it would just feel like really,
really strange. Yeah, especially in 90 degree DC heat.
Yeah, so that's my choice.
That's good. You like can really get some good air.
And the salt, if it happens to get in their eyes, you know.
Whoops.
And the one question I always ask, what is your deathbed meal?
Probably salmon roe on its own.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Ikura on its own.
Maybe marinated with like some soy and mirin, and that's it.
Rad.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good answer.
That's a good one.
But like, if it, that's your whole meal, we're talking about like a lot of roe.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I don't know if I really would want to be like super full when I'm you know, being
zapped. On,
exactly.
As it were? Okay.
Yeah.
That's probably insensitive.
So I just want like an umami like moment before. Nice. Yes. Yeah.
Support that.
Something that I like to play, would you rather? So two ridiculous situations.
Oh, man.
For an entire year, would you rather have every cocktail you order at a bar mansplained to you by the most pretentious of bartenders? Or drink only Shirley Temples out in public? It can be with your
grenadine.
Oh no, you know what? No.
I was gonna, okay. That's an easy choice.
Rose is grenadine. Let's twist the screws a little bit.
Yeah. I'd rather be mansplained too.
Oh. Yeah, because I need my booze. Wow.
And honestly, I'm with you. I have standards.
Yeah.
Oh, that. I thought you were.
That's why I said, well, you asked me before we went on air, and I said, I'll take the mansplaining, but I can't guarantee that there's not going to be a physical altercation at some point. A year being mansplained, there's only so much a woman can take.
Oh, so true.
So, yeah. I also want to be able to drink in public. Grenadine.
Exactly. Yeah, but real grenadine. Yeah. Like, that's why I was like, oh, that's not a choice. I could do the Shirley Temple, but roses, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
So you're a Philly native.
Yes.
And we still love you.
Oh.
All right. No hard feelings.
Oh, I love Philly.
So it's a great place.
No shame.
So you know, one of the like most famous things that comes out of Philly, besides Tory Pratt, is the Philly cheesesteak.
Yes.
So we play a game, Fuck, Marry, Kill. And you know the concept. Who would you fuck, who would you marry, and who would you kill? So
marry, kill.
All right. So your three options are, for your Philly cheesesteak provider, you have a fuck, marry, kill of Geno's, Pat's, or Jim's.
All right.
Geno's, Pat's, Jim's.
Super easy. I would fuck Pat's.
Okay.
I would marry Jim's, and I would kill Geno's.
Wow.
And if anybody has not had Jim's out there, just don't even bother with Pat's and Geno's. Go to Jim's.
Kind of want to get on a train to Philly right now.
Yeah. And you have to get the Whiz version the first time. You're not allowed to get anything else. And it's cash only. And when my husband and I were getting married, we decided that, you know, the way to manage everybody's expectations was ask everybody, including our parents and everybody, you know, what is the one thing you want out of this wedding? Just to make sure that they get, like, you know, their priorities met. And, you know, my husband wanted to ride in on a horse, classic Indian tradition.
Oh, geez, that is incredible.
It was awesome. And then I said I wanted to end the night with a Jim's cheesesteak. And I got
that
it.
That is not a euphemism.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah. Well.
And you got it.
And I got it. So
you are
everybody
the luckiest
try Jim's.
Girl in the
try
world.
Jim's.
Well, now I was going to ask what how to order one at Jim's. But now after your comic cat.
Hey now.
I have never had a cheesesteak at either one at any of these places.
Well, you need to just go to Jim's. Don't even bother with the others.
What is the lingo that I need to say?
So with. Whiz. Just say
whiz.
Okay.
Steak whiz.
Steak whiz.
Steak whiz. And then if you want to put ketchup on it, you can. But I try it without it first and decide what your style
ketchup
is.
Ketchup does not belong in my Philly cheese
I
steak.
Generally agree.
But what do I know? I'm just from D.C.
It's okay. Honestly, like, everybody loves the food they love. I'm just saying try Jim's.
I'm into it. So she's marrying Jim. Jim, can you hear her? I know she's already married. But.
Well, Tori. Thank you for joining us this week. Kat, thank you for joining us this week
as well.
What
a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. And now we're on Spotify. So
woo-hoo!
You can just follow us. Give a little quick follow.
That was awesome.
And you'll find us on all social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC. So go ahead and you know tag a shift, #ShiftDrink or show us your shifty whenever you have one after work today. Don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes or give us a one star on Yelp. I did not write that. Jeez. A special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for our intro music and DJ RecTech for the hilarious sound effects. Next week, we discuss Bill Murray's newest foray into the world of coffee, making the Americano great again.
Can't wait.
All right. And thank you. Our quote of the week, the best harvest comes from the worst soil. So Tori, Kat, thank you for coming on the show.
All right. Cheers.
All thanks. Right.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.